As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Benzema couldn't resist. Blocked by Xhaka. Hit by Pogba! Oh, that is special. And he knows it.
Look, man, I'm the one they all fear. I was the man of the year last year. Now I'm the man of the year for the second year straight. Like, nobody don't compare.
Whacking it forward as much as he could, but the wind blows it back. And Pogba! What a stunning goal!
I put my city on my shoulders. You ain't cold, I'm cold, I'm the coldest. Got my Adidas creps from my knee go top. You can't get this yet, man, a joke is.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Manchester United podcast from The Athletic. On the pod today, we're going to talk about Paul Pogba a lot because we need to answer the question, what happens next with his contract still unsigned and his future still in question after a really brilliant international break for the Manchester United midfielder as well. We're going to preview Leicester and find out if they're as worried about us as we seem to be about them with no central defence ahead of the weekend. And we'll also pay a mention to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his policy of rotating Cristiano Ronaldo, which may not happen this weekend. The Athletic's Laurie Whitwell is with us. Hello, Laurie. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. You okay?
Yep, very good. Thank you. And of course, as well, Andy Mitter with us as well, editor of United We Stand. Andy, you all right?
All good, mate. Looking forward to the Leicester game at the weekend. I've missed watching United in the international break.
Yeah, we might be watching it through the gaps in our fingers, maybe. But we'll talk about the Leicester game in a little while, won't we? First, we need to talk about a very interesting article, Andy, that you've written this week about Paul Pogba. And I think it sums it up quite nicely to say Pogba's reign at Old Trafford has created a lot of questions. And this is probably the biggest of them all. What happens next? You've tried to answer it.
Yeah, and the reaction's been really interesting. I spoke to people on all sides, so from the Manchester United side, from Paul's side as well. And they've all got different perspectives and different views, and they're absolutely entitled to have their positions. United fans seem completely divided on Paul Pogba, not just as a player, but whether he's worth keeping on. And as I discussed in the article, there's a very good offer there for him. It would make him one of the best paid footballers in the world. Is he worth that? Well, we can debate that. I'm sure Laurie and yourself have got different views on that. And in January, which is only 10 weeks away, he can start pre-contract talks with another club if he wants to leave Manchester United. So many different views on this. There's two I'll just mention because I know you're going to talk about it more. Were United wrong not to offer him a contract 2 years before the end? Because I spoke to one agent who said Man United have got this monumentally wrong. And I pushed back and said, I don't think they did, because at that time, Pogba had scored one goal. He hadn't had a good season. He'd had a lot of injuries. United were still reeling from the overpaying of wages of players like Alexis Sanchez. And I don't recall anybody saying now's the time to tie Paul Pogba to a long-term contract. That, however, created a situation where Paul Pogba now feels that he's at liberty to take his time and decide his own future, which he is. And he's also seen David De Gea wait his own contract out. The end result there was that David De Gea is now the best paid goalkeeper in the world, best paid Spanish footballer in the world. So it can have positive consequences. and Paul Pogba can make a decision. One agent said to me, there are not a lot of clubs who could afford to pay for Paul Pogba if a transfer fee is involved, but there are a lot of clubs who could afford a free Paul Pogba, and that includes his astronomical wages and astronomical agent's fee. He likes playing at United at the moment. He's enjoying his football. He likes the fact that Ronaldo's joined the club. He's been amenable to signing a contract throughout the whole of this year. I've said that, but then Manchester United might say, well, of course he's amenable, but the offer that he would expect is an absolutely astronomical one. United's view is that they've made him an exceptionally good contract offer. And United fans, and I don't know what you two think, are basically saying, is he worth that offer?
Laurie, is he worth it?
It comes down to an equation, doesn't it, where you think of what it would take to replace him. And at present, it would take a lot more to replace him and the wages that would come with a certain player than it would be to retain Paul Pogba for, obviously very big wages. You know, we're talking £400,000 a week, which would surpass David De Gea, be a bit under Cristiano Ronaldo. It's within United structure. You know, they've got a good wage to turnover ratio. It's sort of like 60%, which is actually higher than it has been in previous seasons, actually. You know, you've got room in the wage structure. You know, Juan Mata is there on quite a bit of money. You know, you expect him to leave at the end of the season, for example. So I would say he is worth the money because you look at what he can do and no other player in United squad can do what he can do on the pitch. You know, he's got 7 assists already. I know he's perhaps slowed down a little bit since the start of the season, but those passes that he makes from deep, the link up that he has around the edge of the box, the strikes that he can produce, you know, we've seen for United and for France, okay, not on a regular basis for United, but I think he adds an element of stardust, certainly last season. You know, you look away at Fulham in terms of the goal that he scored there, that was a crucial winning goal. He brings an extra dimension to United's formation. Now, obviously, where does he play? You know, Solskjaer tried him again in sort of deep midfield, although I think he had a bit more of a license against Villarreal, and Villarreal managed to pick United off on the counter-attack. Does he play in that left-hand position where he's looked very good? I mean, it's congested over there, isn't it? So that would be a difficult one to sort of balance out with. But I just feel like he is a sort of special player. You know, he's shown again for France during this international break that he has those qualities at a very elite level. You know, United don't have an abundance of midfielders that are at that top, top level, and he is. Obviously, you just want him to be harmonious within the squad, and he is. You know, you want him to be respectful of Solskjaer, and he is. I think he needs to have something that he's building towards. We've always seen that with France, for example, that he's always had that silverware right in front of him that he can produce his best performances for. Now on the flip side, you might say, well, you should be doing that in the dark days of a club. You know, you should be able to lead your team through those difficult moments. But he's not a Roy Keane character. He's you know, Paul Pogba is a different person, and I think he needs something tangible to be working towards. And that's how it felt at the start of the season with Cristiano Ronaldo joining and United looking really good. Obviously, it's had a bit of a dip now, so I do feel like his mentality will be dependent upon where United are in the table and what they're looking towards to do at the end of the season.
I think my issue with Pogba is the fact that we're 5 years in now, aren't we? And we're still sort of talking about what position he's going to play, about sort of creating the right environment for him. I think we talked at the start of the season about who's the player to unlock Pogba. I've heard that so many times over the course of the last few years as well. Is that sort of the issue, Andy, that even after all this time and all the success that he's had, including, of course, this week with France in the Nations League, it's still not quite right at United, almost?
It's not quite right, and that became really apparent to me sat in Munich during the Euros when he played the best ball I've seen this calendar year to set up France to go ahead against Germany. And the day after that, I was asked to write a piece, the gist being, why is he so good for France and not as good for Manchester United? And again, I did my job, I spoke to people, and there were some obvious lines there. France have got better footballers than Manchester United. You might argue now that United's squad contains a lot of world-class players, of which he's one of them.
Which supposedly Pogba's been waiting for as well. So
he's happy about that. I was also told he likes to play in a more advanced position. As Laurie said, no issues at all with him as a professional. He's completely polite. Even last week when he was asked in Italy about Juventus, he responded out of politeness and respect for his former club. That's what I was told. That was soon spun into Paul Pogba flirting with Juventus.
Come and get me, plea.
Yeah. I was told that was not the case. That Juventus were great when he was there. They were great when he went back there in 2018 as a Manchester United player. But he's such news. You know, you can just see people talking about him. People have got such entrenched positions. And I find myself agreeing with both sides. I really do. I can see there's really strong sides to the argument.
Yeah.
I would like him to stay. I'm like Laurie. He can do things that the other midfielders can do. He can get the ball. His feet are so good in those tight positions that no other midfielder can do that. On his day, he is a world-class player. He's certainly considered a world-class player globally. Commercially, he doesn't touch Cristiano Ronaldo. Nobody does. Nobody comes close to him. Nobody's even 10% of Cristiano Ronaldo. But what's the alternative? Go out and buy a player with all the attributed transfer costs. Then again, flip it back the other way. Paul Pogba's stock is not as high as it was when he first joined Manchester United. Madrid aren't going to sign him. He wanted to go to Real Madrid. He wanted to go to Barcelona more than Real Madrid. And Barca just said, and this is in 2016, we can't afford you. And then Madrid, who could afford him, thought they were making good progress. And the way United got him was quite clever. United went to him and said, you being linked with Madrid has created this many social media interactions. You being linked with Manchester United has created seven times as many. If you join Real Madrid, great, good luck to you. You'll be the number five star there. If you come back home to Manchester United, you'll be the talisman. We'll build a team around you. And Pogba went for that. Clearly, United can compete on a salary level as well. But that quite hasn't happened. He hasn't been the talisman. Maybe because he's not a talisman. He isn't Roy Keane. He's not Brian Robson. He never will be. But I've heard any negatives about him in the dressing room. He became a really important character in the dressing room. The only negative I heard was that the uncertainty about his future was not a good thing. But that was like a year ago. And a lot of the younger players really looked up to him. And after Wayne Rooney left and after Zlatan Ibrahimovic left, Paul Pogba became the main man in that dressing room.
You said before, Andy, about he always creates this, doesn't he? No matter what happens, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's somewhere in between, he always creates debate. He seems to divide opinion. And like you said before as well, sometimes you can find yourself on both sides of that divide as well and find yourself agreeing or disagreeing with both sides. The amount of comments already on your article that's not been on The Athletic that long shows exactly just how strong the opinions are when it comes to Paul Pogba. I'll just give you a flavour now. PD says, might be time to stop asking the will Pogba be world-class question now. He's superb, but let's just enjoy what he brings to the table rather than what we think he should achieve, which is sort of a theme of our conversation so far. Goes on to say, I'll definitely miss him if he leaves, but it's unlikely to change much in United's system under Ollie. Whatever he chooses, I wish him the best. Paul G, he definitely has his qualities, but I don't see what role he fulfills long term. When he plays in a midfield too, we get overrun. We don't exactly need him as a left winger, especially with Rashford coming back. But on those wages, he'd be virtually undroppable. No matter what the point is, Laurie, it's almost hard to disagree with it because you sort of can see both sides to this debate. And he reminds me a bit of Juan Sebastian Verón, in a sense, that there's no doubt about his quality whatsoever, at all. And at international level, and obviously at previous clubs, he's shown exactly what he can do. At times at Manchester United, he's shown exactly what he can do. But it's just not quite right. I go back to that point again. It's still not quite there with Pogba, is it?
Yeah, you make a really good point in terms of, you know, Paul Pogba they bought for a world record fee at the time, and it didn't really seem like they had an actual plan on the pitch for him. They might have had a plan, as Andy alludes to, on the social media side of things. But in terms of the actual pitch, he has shuffled around quite a lot, which you'd think, if he's your main guy,
He's still being shuffled around.
I mean, I know the best players, you know, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, gets shuffled around by Pep sometimes, you know, false nine or whatever, but he predominantly has a position in that team, and he knows what he's doing in the system. Pogba's sort of keeps on being asked to do slightly different things, and that's probably because he can do lots of different things. I mean, you know, the stature of him makes you think he can win aerial balls or he can put tackles in. Obviously, he's got incredible technique, so you think he's a sort of master of all trades, but it feels like he falls between a few stools at times. Those comments both, you know, spot on, really. I can't really argue with either of them, even though I've already said I think he is worth, you know, that kind of wage. But I changed my mind. I have changed my mind quite frequently on this. I've been extremely frustrated with with him in the past, years or whatever. You know, when Jose Mourinho left, I also felt that Paul Pogba contributed to an atmosphere where, you know, there was a lethargy around the place. Was there that full commitment? We knew stories at the time that he had been interested in going to Barcelona even back then. So then you hear about what a good character is around the place. You know, he will often, for example, there might be a media guy that says, oh, can you do this interview for us last minute? And it's like, he's, you know, somebody else has perhaps dropped out and he's gone, yeah, no problem. And he's a very personable guy. He's very well liked.
It's a great interview as well, isn't it? Yeah, there's sort of like, Paul's coming now. Paul will be here in 2 minutes. Then he gets there and he's just really nice. He's sort of like, he's built up to be this sort of, not monster, because that is really unfair, but he's built up to sort of be someone that you might have to sort of tread carefully around and stuff like that.
Yeah, prima donna or whatever. Yeah,
he's nothing but nice, really, to be honest, and very polite and interesting and engaging and all the things you'd want him to be, really.
Well, he's got his background's really fascinating, and I mean, yeah, obviously sometimes when he's doing his dancing, when he was doing his dancing when he was injured, you're looking at that going frustrated, thinking, you know, get back to Carrington, please. But at the same time, he's
playing basketball somewhere.
Playing basketball,
or
yeah. I mean, yeah. I know that frustrated people, I think, when they were looking at thinking, we'd love to have your recuperation in house. You know, he does his own thing with his medical team, which some players do, you know, because they have their own ways of doing things. But
it was only really because he thought that was the best way to get back fit for United, wasn't it, really? It was just his own view, whether that contrasted with views at the club at the time.
Yeah,
he still had the right intentions, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, while it might have looked bad, I think it also speaks to his personality, you know. You know, I think all power to that. We're often, you know, sort of complain about footballers being, you know, off a conveyor belt and too manufactured. And actually, Paul Pogba's pretty unique. He is who he is, and he's not afraid to show it. So I like that side to him. What have been your experiences with him then, Ian? I mean, I'm interested, because I've never had a one-to-one with him, so I'm interested in your kind of thoughts on it all.
Well, I interviewed him when he first arrived. He's one of the first ones that he did. United put him up pretty quickly, as you'd expect for the world's most expensive player. He just seemed like an excited schoolboy, I'll be honest, back then. He seemed really genuinely happy to be back in Manchester. He didn't seem like he was saying what he had to say. He was saying what he really thought. He seemed engaged with the task ahead. Around that sort of time, obviously, Ibrahimovic had joined, Mkhitaryan had joined as well, Jose had just joined. There was a real sort of buzz around the club at that point, and a feeling that they were going to get back on track and get back to winning things, which ultimately they did in that season, with the Europa League and the League Cup as well. There was sort of a box office feel about the team that he seemed to engage with. Similar to now in some ways, I suppose, or similar to a few weeks ago when Ronaldo joined and Varane and Sancho joined, a sense of excitement, but always polite, never a problem, always on time, you know, all the things that you sort of would want from him, really. And I think I said a few weeks ago about Zlatan being built up to be like waiting for the quote, almost, you know, waiting for the line. And Pogba's not really sort of known for that. But actually, if you sit and listen to him and chat to him about football, incredibly interesting and engaging, like I say, someone who you would sit and listen to, and measured in what he says as well. And smart. He's a smart guy. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. You can't build the profile that he's built on talent alone. You have to also be smart in the way that you do it. And he's positioned himself in a certain way. He's been smart with that. He's surrounded himself with people who can do that as well. Andy, I think going back to the comments, something to sum it up quite nicely. Paul, let him go. It hasn't worked and will never work now. Paying him $400,000 a week after a wildly inconsistent 5 years is madness. And on the complete flip side, Vishal, get out while you can, Paul.
And you find myself agreeing with both comments again. I'm so conflicted on it agreed with everything you said, and he's smart, as you said. He was probably right to leave United in 2012. Sir Alex Ferguson isn't the only person and the master of everyone's future. He went to Juventus. He called it right. He's smart. His agent has always got the back of his players, and that upsets fans of clubs because they've got the back of their clubs rather than individuals. When I saw him walk out with blue hair in the Manchester derby, I thought, what on earth's going here? But then he was absolutely brilliant in the game, which matters more. I think he divides United fans on age as well. Younger fans tend to love him, tend to like his dancing around. And I don't have any issue with that. He's not going out and drinking 12 pints. He's dancing. It's not that big a deal. He's a family man. I get confused when he doesn't mention that he's a Manchester United player on his online bios. The relationship with United fans can be conflicted at the matches. There's not an obvious song for Paul Pogba.
True.
In 2018, Laurie's right. I think he did contribute to the negativity around the club. And I was told at the start of December 18, they'll get rid of the manager and they wish they could get rid of Paul Pogba. But it's easier to sack a manager than it is to sack a player. But I remember going to Cardiff and I put this in the piece for Ollie's first game. And I don't think Pogba's stock was lower than that day. Really was. We've got rid of Mourinho. Let's get rid of this person out of the club now. But performances and goals can change everything. The following season, he scored 16 goals and he was really important for Manchester United. And to be fair to him, even before his big injury, he was turning out most weeks. So the argument put against Ander Herrera when he asked for a huge amount of money was, wait a minute, Ander, if we add up all your performances and those of Juan Mata's, they still don't equal the number of games that Paul Pogba's playing. And this was not Mata now, this was Mata 3 or 4 years ago. So we could probably have 100 different arguments here about Paul Pogba, for and against, and I might find myself agreeing with 90 of them.
I agree, yeah. One of the notes is about, you know, if Pogba left and a defensive midfielder came in who was perfect for what United need right now, would you take that? And part of me thinks yes, and the other part of me would be really sad to see him go. Because it feels unfulfilled still. I'll go back to it again. It doesn't feel quite right, but that's because it feels unfulfilled. Going back to what you were saying about when he first came, about this vision that Manchester United sold him, about building a team around him, about being the talisman. Sort of still waiting for that in a sense. But then the other part of me thinks, well, we shouldn't wait for that because we know the answer to that now. You know, he's not the he's not the player to build the team around necessarily, but his talents are of a level that you want to indulge him, you want to harness it, you want to play him in a role that's going to get the best out of him, because we've seen he can produce match-winning moments, just maybe not as consistently as some of the others. For me, Bruno, not sort of push Pogba aside, but Bruno came in and almost overnight changed the feeling around the club, changed the way that the team played. You were hearing stories instantly about the demands on his teammates, leading by example, but also dishing out bollockings here and there, which I thought was really encouraging. It felt like there wasn't enough of that in United's team at that point. That's sort of what I thought Pogba would do, but then again, maybe it's unfair for me to think that and then to still hold him to account for that 5 years later, Laurie.
Yeah, I mean, it is a contradiction, isn't it, that, you know, do you want a guy to be everything or can he just be himself? And clearly Pogba's not Bruno. Bruno is high demand of himself and of everybody else. I think Pogba probably just accepts that some people are of a certain level, you know, maybe. And
yeah.
And kind of...
But then again, you sort of watch Bruno for Portugal, watch him in a major tournament over the summer, watch him in the qualifiers, you know. He's sort of decoration to that Portugal team, whereas you watch Pogba for France, he almost is the French team. You know, there's clips of him going around on social media this week giving out the team talk at half time in the Nations League final. We've seen the stuff after France won the World Cup as well. I mean, he is sort of one of the main components of the world champions at international level. That's not questioned at all.
I think he does do stuff like that for United, but I guess the difference, you know, the reporting of Bruno Fernandes was because he was new and because it was like a rocket fuel to the setup at United at that point. You know, United were looking desperate in terms of creativity, in terms of forward momentum. Pogba was out injured at the time, obviously, and Bruno came in and lit the fuse, and so people wanted to report about that and ask questions. Oh, what's Bruno saying? What's he doing? And he was quite forthcoming in himself, you know, in talking about that. He's obviously got quite a funny social media presence as well, where he picks on players a little bit, you know, in a jovial way, in a kind of quite a nice way. Yeah, I think that's probably the difference there. But I think you're right in terms of talking about Pogba perhaps feeling a little bit sidelined when Bruno Fernandes came in, and that goes back to Andy's earlier point about that contract that summer could have been offered. You know, and there was an idea that Pogba felt a little bit nonplussed at the fact that there was no new contract at that point. Now, obviously, the context being his agent had publicly said it was over for him and Man United, you know, a few months beforehand, and he'd previously, the summer beforehand, said that he, you know, fancied a new challenge. So I think United's perspective was, well, okay, would we have offered you a contract? And we might have offered you a contract if we thought there was any chance of you signing it, basically. So, but I do think that Bruno Fernandes' dynamic is really interesting amid all this, because he's that number 10 that Paul Pogba really, I know, was that the position for him? You know, I know it's probably, you're probably thinking as a, you know, I don't know, we're going back to this, aren't we? But Is he a number eight, you know, bombing up and down, or is he a number, could he just sit around the number 10 situation? I don't know. I mean, and obviously we touched on it last week, didn't we? But, you know, France had him in a midfield two with a 3-4-3. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's one to explore.
Yeah, I feel like we could do this all day and we probably will do on another day. But if you want to know more about the situation with Paul Pogba, I urge you to go and read Andy's article on The Athletic at the moment. If you're not a subscriber, it's a good reason to go and do that as well. You can still get a 33% discount off a subscription. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod, even if you just want to read the article on Paul Pogba.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yes, after two long weeks watching Manchester United players doing all right on international duty, we finally have a Premier League game to look forward to again as Manchester United travel to Leicester on Saturday. Now, we can tell you all about the United perspective ahead of that game, but we thought it might be quite interesting on Talk of the Devils to do something different and get a preview to the match from the Leicester perspective. I'm delighted to say we're joined now by Rob Tanner, the Athletic correspondent for Leicester. Rob, thank you for joining us.
Hiya, Ian. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. So, Manchester United fans are maybe a little bit apprehensive about the weekend, but Leicester fans should be as well, shouldn't they? One win in seven for them. It's sort of been a bit disastrous start quietly, hasn't it?
Oh, it has. I mean, considering the last few seasons, they've come out of the traps really, really sharply. This season, it's been the reverse. They've been really slow out of the blocks. A lot of injuries again. Injuries carried over from last season. Losing Wesley Fofana in the last pre-season game against Villarreal was a massive blow. And there just seems to be some sort of hangover as well from the fact that for the second season running, they dropped out of the Champions League spots on the final week of the season. So they're struggling to get themselves going again this season.
Yeah, it wasn't Manchester United's fault last time, was it? It was only the first time, to be fair. We might reflect on that game because it was a crazy game in some ways, considering the impact that that result had and the way it went for Leicester. What has gone wrong then, Rob? Is it just a case of what you've explained, or, you know, I guess injuries are a good reason considering that the players that have been missing?
I think the injuries are a major factor, not just the injuries they've picked up this season, but the ones from last season that's still hanging over into this season. The likes of Harvey Barnes, James Maddison, you know, these guys have picked up injuries that really curtailed their seasons when they were really flourishing last season. Ricardo Pereira is another one. And they're just struggling to get back up to 100%, and confidence seems to have been damaged a little bit. But I think the biggest concern for Brendan is defensively, the injuries there. They always look like they're going to ship goals. They've kept one clean sheet in the league, one in the Caribou Cup, incidentally, when Johnny Evans played. And that's a major factor. Johnny, obviously, the United fans will know very, very well, is such a huge influence on the team. I mean, Brendan says it himself. Whenever he plays, the other defenders around him look better players. And in his absence, they brought in Ryan Bertrand and Yannick Vestergaard, two of the Southampton back four that shipped nine goals against Leicester a couple of years ago. And they've struggled to settle. Vestergaard, for me, I mean, I've had this little debate with Brendan personally. I don't think he fits the profile. Normally, they like defenders like Siunsu, Fofana, young, athletic, that can press into midfield because Brendan likes to play a high line and squeeze the game. And he doesn't look comfortable at all doing that. He's, you know, very much like a Claudio Ranieri from 2016 defender. Ball coming in the box, he'll head it away, he'll kick it away. He's pretty good on the ball. But when he's one-on-one, when he's having to defend space, it looks like to me that he struggles there. And Bertrand as well also looks like he's struggling to get up to speed. So they've got a real problem in that back four at the moment. And Brendan's supposed to have spent the international break, trying to come up with a solution, whether that be a change of system. You might see back three against United if Evans is fit from this plantar fasciitis injury that has been plaguing him, an injury that has no cure. Ultimately, he might need surgery. It's an inflammation of the tendon in his foot, and it causes a lot of pain. So there's a lot of problems, a lot of things for Brendan to think about.
What you're doing right now, Rob, is you're making Manchester United fans feel much better about going to Leicester this weekend, because all anyone seems to be talking about is the fact that probably Varane and Maguire are going to both be missing for this game. We've got no idea who's going to play centre-half. Mm. So actually, it's quite reassuring to know that Leicester have got no idea who's going to play centre-half either.
No, and this has been going on for a while as well. I mean, the injuries... I mean, Laurie will know from his time with covering the Midlands, Leicester used to have a reputation for having all players available most of the time. They had a fantastic injury record. But the last couple of years, whether that is the demands of COVID, the condensed fixture schedule, now playing Europa League football as well, the injuries just keep coming and coming and coming. It's just like, it's like Deontay Wilder on the ropes and Fury's throwing the punches. The punches keep coming for Brendan Rodgers at the moment in terms of the injuries and trying to figure out the reason why. But I mean, some of them are just totally unavoidable. The Wesley Fofana one was a terrible tackle, and ACLs for James Justin and Ricardo Pereira. But yeah, he's got to try and juggle what he's got available and try and come up with a solution for Saturday. Otherwise, United can guarantee they'll get one or two.
On the flip side, Rob, someone I know well from obviously covering the Midlands, Jamie Vardy, he seems to be still banging in the goals. I mean, 34 now, and he's still, Premier League top scorer. Yeah. Has Vardy changed his game much? I mean, I noticed the highlights against Burnley, and his finishing seems supreme, which I think is perhaps a bit underrated. It used to be that he would just tear through people. I remember after the 5-3, the famous 5-3 that provoked Louis van Gaal to change his whole sort of philosophy on United's attacking approach, and Vardy described himself in an interview with us as just a pest, just used to hassle people. He obviously still does do that, but I think, has he sort of adapted his game a little bit?
Yeah, he's had to as he's got a little bit older. I mean, it'd be interesting if Kelechi Iheanacho, which we're expecting, will play alongside him, because he will play a slightly different role. He still plays on the shoulder of the last guy. He doesn't run like a heron across the back four to close people down like he used to. He does conserve his energy. I mean, he never used to have the highest numbers in terms of touches in a game, even back in 15, 16, but he's having even less now. But when he does affect the game, when he is involved, it is really clinical. I mean, 6 goals in 7 Premier League games again this season. And you're right, 34 years old, he shouldn't be doing that at this level. He's a freak of nature, this guy. I mean, the summer, well, whilst others were off working with personal trainers and getting themselves ready for the new season, he was on the sofa drinking beers and watching the Euros. And, it's just a bit of downtime. That's what he needs. And he's being managed superbly by Brendan, but he is still the talisman. I mean, they brought in Patson Daka, and the fans are going, why haven't we seen more of Patson Daka? Well, we haven't seen Patson Daka because Jamie Vardy's still bang on form. And Kelechi Iheanacho he's had his chances limited at the moment. He's fantastic ended last season. He's only made the one start in the league, but he's affecting games whenever he comes in as well. It could be on Saturday that Leicester's best form of defence is attack with those two, if you can play them together, and that would mean a change of shape. But Vardy's just phenomenal. I mean, you look at him and he's still so lean, and I mean, you look at his lifestyle early in his career, and the dripping sandwiches at the service stations on the way to training in non-league and stuff like that. I'm glad you guys know what dripping sandwiches are. Nobody's asked. When I did this with Adam Laventhal, he was going, what's that? I said, it's a northern thing. And so his lifestyle then was very, very different now. And he is quite a model pro. I mean, instead of going out nightclubbing now, he spends his time tending his allotment and growing broad beans and things like that. So he's a very chilled guy now, family guy. But
Jamie Vardy has an allotment.
He's got an enormous garden at his house in Lincolnshire. And our colleague Stu James went out to visit him, and he basically took him around his allotment and basically telling him all about the veggies that he's growing and the chilies. And oh yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Jamie Vardy. When he throws himself into something, he throws it in himself in totally. So yeah, he's Adam Titmarsh of football, the Premier League at the moment. So if you need to know anything about growing marrows, Jamie Vardy's your man.
Hi Rob. When I look at Leicester, I see a brand new training ground, which looks fantastic. Plans to expand the stadium. You already give Manchester United fans the biggest away allocation of the season, and there's been some really important games between the two clubs in recent years. The game at the end of the season where Manchester United confirmed Champions League. Leicester obviously knocked United out of the FA Cup on the way to winning that trophy. Do you sense a club is in a good place, continuing to build, to expand the revenues so that you don't need to sell Harry Maguire in the future. And it was going back before you got promoted, half of your first team were driving in from Manchester every day. They used to have a van with a bed in the back and used to drive over the Peak District. And clearly that's not the best way to run a top level football club. Is this gradually moving towards Leicester being, I wouldn't say a super club, but somewhere in between?
Well, they're still very, very ambitious. I mean, considering the pandemic and the financial impacts of that, I mean, you consider the owners, their main business is in tourism, and there's not a business that's been more affected from COVID than that. But they've still been pressing ahead. I mean, you're right, the training ground is just amazing. I mean, the level of detail. The fact that we know there's 89 great crested newts down there, and we know this because they go at night and count them. It's an incredible place, but that costs £100 million.
Is that Jamie Vardy's other hobby, is it?
Well, I bet he's down there because they've got a herb garden. I bet he's been tending that. And and they've obviously got the massive... I mean, the plans for the stadium isn't just to extend the stand. It is a whole area that they're putting hotel in there. There's an indoor arena. They're having an avenue like Wembley Way up to the ground, lots of bars and restaurants. It is a very ambitious idea that reflects the ambitions of the owners, but be under no doubt, they've still got a huge way to go to close the gap off the field with the likes of United. I mean, these are global brands. They can draw on fan bases around the world. Leicester are still fledglings in that regard, although it's increased a lot since the title winning season, when you know we used to get phone calls from American radio stations and they couldn't even say Leicester, they used to call it Leicester. So people know it's Leicester now, know Leicester City. So they've come a long way in that regard, but there's still a long way. I mean, this was the first summer that they haven't had to sell one of their prized assets. But I mean, they've done very well out of it. Let's make no bones about it. When you think Kante, Drinkwater, Mahrez, Maguire and Chilwell, they recruited all of them for 25 million. They've sold them for 250 million. And most of that's gone to Chelsea as well. Most of those players gone to Chelsea and they haven't got probably the best deal out of some of those. But it's been a really 5-6 years of real progress for the club, but there's still a long, long way to go. And I wouldn't say that they're in a position now where they can comfortably hold on to key players. If somebody wanted a Harvey Barnes, they'll have to pay through the teeth for it. But I think Leicester are not the sort of club that will be seen as a dead end for players coming in. The likes of Yuri Tielemans perhaps might want to see if the grass is greener elsewhere and get Champions League football. And obviously with the way things have gone the last couple of years, Leicester can't guarantee him that. So he might want to look further afield. But they'll have plans in place to replace him, though.
Just finally, Rob, to bring it back to the game this weekend then. We said at the top about Manchester United fans being a little bit apprehensive about the game. How are Leicester fans feeling about this Manchester United team coming to Leicester, Cristiano Ronaldo and co in town again? Are they looking forward to it, or is there a bit of apprehension on your side as well?
A bit of apprehension because of the injuries and everything, that's the slow start this season. But I think there's a real buzz about the fact that Ronaldo's come in. I mean, the fact that how many people have asked me if I can get tickets
really?
For the game. Yeah, I mean, mates suddenly go, oh, any chance of getting a couple of tickets? I can't get any tickets. But yeah, that's the Ronaldo effect, isn't it? And what really excites me is, as I said, Leicester, attacking-wise, are really exciting at the moment. There's goals in the side. They can't keep them out the other end. You could say the same about United, really. You know, attacking-wise, looking good. Probably defensively need a bit of work. Probably need a defensive midfielder. Probably need a Wilfred Ndidi, who's also injured for this Saturday. So I can see it all out attack from both sides and plenty of goals.
Yeah, you've certainly whet my appetite, Rob, and I'm sure everyone else's as well. Brilliant. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Crossing to enemy lines. Brilliant.
Di Maria, a lovely change of pace. Rooney, Di Maria has continued his run, and Di Maria goes for the finish, and that is a sensational goal. Absolutely wonderful from the mercurial magician, Angel Di Maria. More credit to some of the Leicester supporters, even they applauded.
Can we just go back to that 5-3? I mean, forget the scoreline. Angel Di Maria's goal, Andy Mitten. I mean, Falcao, Di Maria, Rooney, Van Persie, all in the team together. I don't care that we lost 5-3. The first 15 minutes were fantastic, weren't they?
Yeah, they were brilliant. They also made Louis van Gaal completely change his strategy for Manchester United after that game.
Yeah, shame,
he just
really,
thought, I'm going to lose my job very quickly if we're conceding five goals. Yeah, as a neutral, it was a staggering game, but I wasn't there as a neutral and I came out the ground and everyone was livid at Louis van Gaal. But that came 14. United had a fantastic pre-season. Maybe optimism rose too highly. And I remember one United staffer saying to Van Gaal in Ann Arbor after United had played Real Madrid, done really well in front of 115,000, I think it was, "Thank you, Louis, you've brought the heart and soul back to this club." And Louis looked at him and said, "Thank you, I appreciate that." And such a comment now seems so out of place because history probably wouldn't agree with that statement whatsoever. But yeah, that Leicester game will not be forgotten about. And I think it was the moment when A, Van Gaal decided certain players are not going to play for me again. And B, following the aftermatch reaction, certain players decided, I don't want to play for Louis van Gaal again. I want out of this club.
I was working at City that day. It was the day that City played Chelsea and Frank Lampard scored against Chelsea. And I remember the tangible excitement in the press room at Manchester United's lineup and the start to that game, because I think we were all waiting to see those four all on the pitch together. And for the first 15 minutes, like I was saying before, it went brilliantly. And for the rest of the game, it went slightly less brilliantly, Laurie. But I've got nothing but good memories about that game, despite the result.
Yeah, I was in the stands that day and it was one of those wow kind of moments. You know, I was covering Leicester at the time, so it was a bit of a weird one, you know, from a professional point of view. But that was the day that the Jamie Vardy story started in earnest.
Yeah, he boomed from that day, really, didn't he? Yeah.
Never a pen. You know, he fouls Raphael for that first pen.
Yeah.
But listen, he knew what he was doing. I'm not sure VAR would overturn it even now. But what you were saying about the top four as well, there's a little bit of an echo to now, isn't there, really, in terms of look at all the quality that United have got in attack, you know, on paper. How can it actually fit into a functioning unit up top, you know? Ronaldo, Cavani, Rashford potentially coming back, Sancho, Pogba, does he play there? Greenwood, I've probably forgotten somebody, Martial, Lingard, you know, and I know perhaps some of those aren't the same stellar level as Rooney, Van Persie, Falcao, Di Maria, you know, were at the time, but it feels kind of similar. You know, this is now Solskjaer's challenge to get a functioning front line that also balances out with the back.
Yeah, it might be Tyler Blackett's chance to get another start as well, considering how many issues we've got at centre back. Anyway,
and on that 5-3, I remember seeing Vardy and didn't know that much about him, thinking if he can go from Stocksbridge Park Steels, where I've watched my brothers play football.
I've played on Stocksbridge Park Steels.
Their little ground with one stand, and there's no stands on the other two sides of the pitch because it's built into a mountain near the steelworks in Stocksbridge.
Slightly windy from memory.
If that lad there can hold his own in a Premier League game, that would be absolutely incredible. And I know he'd gone to Halifax, and I know people who played with him at Halifax, and then he went to Fleetwood as well. I remember people being disgusted at his transfer fee from Fleetwood. £1 million for a non-league player. And he's just proved everybody wrong, because not only did he hold his own, he's become one of the most notable players in the Premier League in since.
And now he grows broad beans for fun. Fantastic. Right. Laurie, we need to talk about one of your articles that's dropped this week, just finally on the podcast, if possible, please. People may have seen it already, but there's some fantastic detail in there about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's reign. You've written it alongside Adam Crafton as well. And I think one of the interesting things that I think has come out of it is a bit of detail on Cristiano Ronaldo and the way he's going to be managed after, of course, being left on the bench for that Everton game. But after scoring in both internationals for Portugal, including a hat-trick in his last game against Luxembourg, I don't think he's getting rotated at Leicester, do you?
I think he's starting, yeah. It obviously caused a lot of debate, and I think there were certain players as well that probably thought, you know, why is Ronaldo not starting? We obviously saw the Sir Alex Ferguson comment to Khabib, the UFC fighter, afterwards, which was kind of amusing, a real surreal sort of conversation to be having. And also Fergie did rotate players back in the day, obviously. But yeah, I mean, the point on that one was, I think Solskjaer realised that Ronaldo was going to play in these games against Portugal. Now, could he have rested a bit? Could he have taken it easier against Qatar and Luxembourg? You know, not the most taxing of opposition, but, you know, he scored a hat-trick and he scored in the other game as well. So clearly he's put his all into those matches. Solskjaer's balancing that up. He's, you know, Ronaldo's 36. It's a long season ahead. Cavani had come off the bench and done so well against Villarreal. I think he thought he deserved a start against Everton. And he told Ronaldo in advance of the game, you know, it wasn't like it was, you know, team sheet up and wow, you know, what's happening here then? Solskjaer does pull players in training before they go out just to say, you know, senior players, if it's a sort of interesting decision that he's made, to kind of explain it a little bit. And you know, Ronaldo accepted the decision. So, yeah, it'll be... But, you know, from this point on, it will be a subject of scrutiny, you know, what happens with Ronaldo, because he's such a big player and so many people want to watch him, as Rob Tanner mentioned. You know, he's got mates calling him up out of the woodwork saying, you know, any chance of a ticket. That's why these decisions by Solskjaer come under such scrutiny, because there's more eyeballs on Manchester United than any other club, I would say. And that's, you know, multiplied by the factor of 10 with Ronaldo being in tow now. But yeah, the piece touches on that with a bit more detail. Andy also contributed to it with his comments from Nicky Butt, in terms of Nicky Butt talking about how Solskjaer delegates, you know, and this was one of the other things that we touched on, in terms of, you know, Kieran McKenna and Michael Carrick taking training, Mick Phelan being involved in terms of setting the sessions and tactical discussions, and also recruitment. But Solskjaer, you know, isn't a guy that is across everything in the way that he wants to be involved in everything. He's happy to allow people to flourish, you know, which is obviously what Sir Alex Ferguson used to do. And obviously that brings its own questions as to whether or not, you know, are the coaches as experienced as you'd like them to be? There's only one way they're going to get that experience, is by coaching, you know, at this level. And people will tell me that, you know, Kieran McKenna's on a trajectory to one day, he has the capacity to manage a top six club. Now, that's a huge statement, but the diligence and sort of professionalism that he puts into his work, you know, conveys that at the moment. But equally, at the same time, he's not there yet. So that's that kind of conflict, I suppose, that goes on. And listen, whenever results aren't exactly spot on, there's always going to be people sort of wondering, could it be better, and why, how could it be better? So that's kind of what the piece addresses.
Okay, if you want to know more about that piece, go to The Athletic, go and read it. Lots of lovely detail in there, and intriguing detail about Solskjaer's reign and the way he runs things at Manchester United. But that's it for the podcast. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Laurie. Thank you, Rob, as well, for joining us earlier on and giving the lowdown on Leicester. We'll be back on Monday to review that game. Maybe a 5-3 the other way, the way we've previewed it. You never know. But until then, take care, and we'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.